Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Keehan. Today, we'll discuss the article by Devine et al. Titled, Increased Hypoxia-Inducible Factor 1 Alpha in Striated Muscle of Tumor-Bearing Mice. This article was published online June 1st, 2017. Joining me today are Deputy Editor Mary Lindsay, Lead Author Lauren Wold, and Content Expert Hemal Patel. Let's get started.
Thank you, Kara. The Wold Laboratory used a proteomics approach to identify effects of cancer-induced cachexia on cardiac muscle structure and function. Really, when they say function, they mean physiology, though. They found progressive loss of cardiac physiology concomitant with perturbations in cardiac metabolism. Lauren, tell us, what was the impetus for this study?
Thanks, Mary. So we've looked at this model of cancer cachexia in muscle function, predominantly skeletal muscle, for years. And we recently have become interested in how this cancer cachexia affects the heart directly. So initially, we had done some studies looking at the physiology as a result of the cancer cachexia within the heart. And so we've become interested in how the proteins within the heart have changed with this cancer cachexia phenotype.
Okay, interesting. Hemal, they observed that HIF-1 alpha was a common mediator identified by their 2D gel analysis. Can you tell us why this is a fascinating finding?
Sure, Mary, that's a good question. So HIF-1 alpha, HIF stands for hypoxia-inducible factor, and in this case, it's the 1 alpha isoform. So this is a metabolic regulator that most cells have, and it's been proposed as an oxygen sensor as well. And so when the levels of oxygen drop, creating either a local or a general hypoxic event, HIF-1 gets activated, and this is a wave that the cells can launch a mechanism to then reprogram to adapt the cells to this challenging metabolic environment that's created by this hypoxic event. So, you know, I've been thinking about sort of this idea in Lauren's paper that the potentially cancer creates a siphon for oxygen that then leads to this global hypoxic event that launches this effect in the cardiac system. And the connection between cancer and the heart is sort of intriguing in this way. You know, we do a lot of work in the laboratory that's tied to oxygen handling and membranes and sort of the evolutionary biology of it. And if you look back at evolution, oxygen handling is a critical like regulatory mechanism for survival of organisms. And one of the first metabolic molecules that life and biology had to adapt to was oxygen. And in this biology and this adaptation, there's evidence that both oxygen is necessary and also detrimental to survival of organisms, where at a really high level, if it's uncontrolled, you can get toxicity through free radical generation and reactive oxygen species. And then at the other extreme, which Lauren's paper seems to go into, is this idea of very low levels that the body launches this metabolic imprint to sort of account for this loss of oxygen and it's detrimental to survival. And so there's really this critical link between oxygen and the survival of an organism based on toxicity versus the ability to survive. And if I may, you know, one of the books that I've been reading and I'd refer the listeners to is Nick Lane's book titled Oxygen, the Molecule That Makes the World. And in this book, he really describes this delicate relationship, which is critical in a lot of senses, between oxygen and life in general.
I see. So it's really interesting that cancer and cardiac intersect at a very basic trigger point in that the need for oxygen and how the body responds to that. So that's very fascinating. Lauren, female mice were used in this study. Why was that and what strain of mice were they? And can you tell us, is strain and sex important for these studies?
Great question, Mary. So we've used female mice predominantly for our cancer cachexia in the heart studies, primarily because the female mice are able to hold their weight much longer. So in the same time frame, the male mice lose a lot more weight. And so it's difficult to ascertain the weight loss effects on the heart independent of the effects of the cancer cachexia that results from the C26 cells that we use. The strain of the mice is CD2F1. And it turns out that this is a normal strain that's used for the production of antibodies in mice. And it seems that this strain is also important because we've tried this in many other different strain types, and the cells just, the carcinoma, adenocarcinoma cells just don't grow. But they seem to really grow well in the CD2F1 cells. So we feel that strain insects is quite important and have done a lot of our studies in other strains as well as in males, and we just don't see the same results.
Okay, Lauren, so that's interesting what you're saying about the both the sex differences and potential strain differences. And so it's possible that the male and the female mice might be responding to either A, differences in how the tumor forms, or B, differences in how the heart responds to that tumor presence. And so do your current and past studies suggest that it might be worth it to check out strain and sex differences in the future?
Absolutely, Mary. That's actually some studies that are ongoing right now in the lab, is looking at the different strain of mice, the different cell types, because we use a C26 adenocarcinoma cell line, but there's multitudes of other cell lines that people have used. So we're doing those studies as well as looking at the differences between males and females. So there's a ton of different studies that we really need to do to understand the strain and sex-dependent effects.
Okay, very good. Himmel, let's talk about c-KIT. It was elevated in the left ventricles of the tumor-bearing mice. Can you tell us why this is significant?
Sure. So c-KIT is a transcription factor that's downstream of HIF-1 alpha. And it's interesting in this setting that, you know, if we think about what's happening in these animals, they're wasting away. So there's this massive stress response that this cancer burden has sort of left the animal to face with. And one of them is muscle wasting and fat wasting. And so in response to this wasting and stress syndrome we see in the heart, I think the heart is trying to compensate, and it's trying to activate every machinery it can to either adapt metabolically to this massive stress or to regenerate itself. And there's lots of evidence in the literature that c-KIT is sort of the start of this regenerative process and the sort of reprogram and recycle cells. And so this may be sort of the heart's mechanism of doing this in this response to this massive stress. One of the sort of caveats to this is c-KIT is a molecule that everyone observes, and there's a lot of controversy in the literature as to what it actually means, what cell types express it, and how it sort of plays out in every cell type. And so I think it warrants sort of further study. Was this a myocyte-specific change in c-KIT? Is it a fibroblast-specific change? Are there other cells that may be involved? And it's sort of unknown and sort of up in the air right now, but worth studying.
I see your point, because if the c-KIT is elevated because of a myocyte contribution, that's a much different outlook on future studies than if the c-KIT is induced because of a fibroblast stimulation. And so that's a very good difference to pay attention to. Okay, Lauren, I want to talk about the increase in the lipid accumulation and the cachexia that you saw in your model. This is reminiscent of what is seen with cardiac aging. As mice go from middle age to old to senescence, there is lipid accumulation within the myocytes, and there is a general wasting of these mice as well. Would you classify your model as an accelerated aging model?
Great point, Mary. So this is actually something that we've started calling our model is a model of accelerated aging, because not only do we see the increase in lipid accumulation, we see the skeletal muscle wasting, but we also see the dramatic changes in cardiac physiology that happens within 19 days of the mouse being perfectly normal. We inject the cells, and 19 days later, the physiology is dramatically reduced. And so I definitely agree with you that this is what we consider a newer model of accelerated aging.
Himmel, did you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, and I think it harkens to this idea of the stress adaptation. If the heart is running out of fuel and it can't use oxygen, maybe it's trying to access other stores in the body, and lipids could be one of them. And the heart is a fat-burning organ, and this may be its last-ditch effort to really try to maximize its fuel efficiency.
Right. That circles back to the whole metabolism component of this project. Lauren, did you have any difficulties in running these studies, or did everything just fall into place?
I wish everything would have just fallen into place. So this study was particularly challenging because for some reason this cell line is very finicky, and we had moved labs to a new building, and the phenotype just decided it didn't want to appear. And so we had to re-derive the cells from the original cell aliquot that is from a colleague here at Ohio State, Dr. Dennis Guttridge. And we definitely had to repeat the study a couple times. And the model is just really finicky. The size of tumors can be variable and really depends on where you inject the cells. And if you're just a very short distance away, it can have dramatic effects on the size of the tumor. So there's always difficulties, but I would say this study in general had a lot more difficulties than other studies.
When we talk about rigor and reproducibility, I know there's a lot of groups who study tumors, and then there's a lot of groups who study cardiac physiology. And so I can imagine that combining both of those models into one must have its own, you know, list of reproducibility issues that you need to maintain and check and clarify along the way. I think this is a very difficult model, and you're commended for getting the results and showing the findings that you have.
Thank you very much. It definitely is a challenge, but it's a fun challenge.
I had sort of one final thought and question. You know, one of the things we as biologists do is we repurpose a lot of knowledge that we have in particular areas. And you've sort of taken that to a level here where you've taken some cancer biology and applied it to the heart. And I was wondering, could we go even a step further, and could you sort of speculate, is there a way to take this knowledge that HIF-1 alpha gets upregulated and causes this wasting syndrome throughout the body to then put it into more of an abstract positive application? And what I was thinking of that was sort of struck me in the paper is this fat wasting. You know, there's this pandemic, epidemic, whatever you want to call it, of obesity in the U.S. and the world. Could this somehow be repurposed?
That's a great point. I hadn't thought of that. I'm trying to think of how to respond, and I hadn't thought of sort of spinning the fat wasting into more of a positive realm as opposed to, as we talked about earlier, accelerated aging. So excellent question.
I think that's a wonderful discussion point. Dr. Lauren Wold, thank you for publishing this very interesting article in AJP Heart. Dr. Hemal Patel, thank you for discussing it with us. Back to you, Kara.
You've been listening to an AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology podcast. For more podcasts like this, visit us online at ajpheart.physiology.org. Thank you.